You're listening to CBC Radio 1 in Lethbridge and Medicine Hat.
Hello once more and welcome back to the Roundup on this St. Patrick's Day afternoon. My name is Bill Richardson here at CBC Vancouver. And St. Patrick's Day was, in a way, I guess, the inspiration for a letter that came our way recently. It's from Bruce Haig, who's a historian with a unique project that celebrates the early explorers of the Canadian wilderness. One of the explorers featured in his project is Paul Kane. Kane was an Irishman who came to Canada as a young man in the early 1800s. His travels took him from Ontario to the West Coast and back, and along the way he made hundreds of field sketches and watercolors. Since this was a time before photographs, his work now gives us a unique picture of the people and landscapes he saw. Now, Bruce Haig suggested, wisely, that March the 17th might be a good day for Roundup listeners to hear the story of this remarkable Irishman, and, of course, the project on which Mr. Haig is working, and I have him on the phone now from his home in Lethbridge. How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Very well, thanks. You know, I grew up in this little enclave in Winnipeg called Silver Heights, and all the streets were named for explorers. I grew up on Hearn Avenue, and nearby was Palliser and Fiddler, and just a couple of streets away there was Kane. So it took me a very long time, actually, to ascertain that these were the names of explorers. Who was Paul Kane, and where did he start out?
Well, he was born in Mallow, Ireland, and he came over when he was about 9 years old. His father had been a soldier, and they left Ireland and settled in York or Toronto. His father was in the spirits business, and Paul was obviously enchanted with the natives that lived in the area at that time, that being fairly much wilderness at that time, and he was always wanting to get out of school and go out and explore and so on. And as he got older, he met some people. He attended Upper Canada College, and he was taken under the wing of a man who recognized his talents and encouraged him with his artwork. Later on, he went to Europe and studied the paintings of the old masters. And while he was in London, he ran into an exhibition of paintings of George Catlin, who was the person that had done the most in recording the American West, and thought to himself, I think maybe I could do this for the part north, the British territories. And so one thing led to the next, and eventually he made his trip.
So his travels then, was he driven more by the urge to find and paint than to explore new territory and open trails, which I guess is what we think of most explorers as doing?
Well, I don't think he was so much opening trails as such. He wanted to record the West, which was quickly disappearing, the native life as it was at its prime. And he was trying to record what was there before it disappeared.
Do you think he had a sense of the importance of his mission in the moment and really of the uniqueness of his enterprise?
Yes, I do. He kept a journal, and this became part of his book that was published in around 1860, The Wanderings of an Artist. It was an amazing book. It's one of the finer ones if you want some excitement in your reading. It was published and it was recorded in, I think, Danish and German and French, and it was a big seller.
Can you think of an incident or two just to give us an example of the kinds of adventures he had along the way?
I can remember him going, after he's gone over the Athabasca Pass, which is near Jasper, Alberta. They're going down the west side of the mountains, and he describes, we're talking, I think it was November, it was in the winter, and there's ice in the river, and they had to cross and recross the river arm in arm 37 times, and you can just imagine what that was like.
Yeah.
And on the way back, going again in the winter time, he's on the Athabasca River, and he describes that the natives normally wearing moccasins, and when the ice was jammed and they had to walk along the river, they would take their moccasins off, because if they didn't, their feet would sweat. And then you'd get these little tiny pieces of ice, and they would cut their feet, so they actually went barefoot.
Was he painting as he was going, or was he making sketches and then painting at home base?
Yeah, he made watercolors, I believe they were. Some wonderful sketches, which are now in the Royal Ontario Museum, quite a few of them. And later on, he would go back, he went back to Toronto and took these and made composite huge paintings, which were the ones that most of us see. Unfortunately, in my estimation, his field studies were even better than his great paintings.
Now, tell me a little bit about your own bookmaking enterprise. I don't mean, you know what I mean by bookmaking. I don't mean making book. I mean you're making these books, having to do with explorers' journals and illustrations. What's your own enterprise?
When I was teaching school, I developed a project where I used to take students out and we would sort of retrace historical routes. We followed the Mounties west from Manitoba to Alberta one year, and we went down the Missouri River and this kind of stuff.
You literally
did this?
Then when
I retired, I came up with an idea of still getting the children involved without having to climb a mountain or so.
Uh-huh.
And so I came up with the idea of taking the journals, sending them out to schools, having the kids illustrate the sections of the journal. Then I would put them in book form, and the sketches would be presented to at places in the world that tied in with the life of the explorer.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. So we'll talk about what you did with the Paul Kane sketches in a moment or two, but what other explorers have come under your guidance?
Well, the first one I did was one that explored the mountains here locally in southern Alberta, a man named Thomas Blackston. And I retraced his route and discovered that not only was he interested in this area, he was in the Army, by the way. He was stationed in China, tried to organize a trip to Tibet. This is in the 1860s.
Wow.
Couldn't get permission. Dragged his wife across Siberia. She divorced him at that point. And
I'm
then
surprised
he decided
she waited that
to
long.
Try and, with all the resources of timber in Siberia, he would try to set up sawmilling, which wasn't being done at the time. He couldn't get permission. In the meantime, he had ordered 3 boatloads of machinery from Britain, so he diverted them to Japan and got permission, and he stayed in northern Japan, the island of Hokkaido, for 23 years, and he documented the birds of Japan in his spare time, and now there's statues in his honor in Japan. So most of the people I've done, and most of the explorers in this part of the world, were global. They would come here, and then they would go to other parts of the empire and beyond.
That's an amazing story, and I'm a little embarrassed to have to admit that I'm hearing about him for the first time. But when you had the sketches in hand then that the school children had done, did you then take them to Japan?
Well, in this particular case, my wife was doing some exchange teaching in Japan. It gave me an excuse, and it happened to be in the same island that I knew Blackston belonged to. So we did the sketchbook before we left, and that was very convenient. I took the sketchbook with me and did a presentation of the book in the same city where Blackston was from.
And how was it received?
Very well, I think. I couldn't understand the language very well, but they seemed to be happy.
All right, now tell me what you've done then with the Paul Kane sketchbook, because this is really how your letter came to our attention, and you took this to Ireland.
When we had done the Paul Kane sketchbook, I knew that he was from a town of Mallow in Ireland, and so I wrote them a letter and said we had done this series of sketches and we had a book and we'd like to present it to somebody that would be interested in receiving it in Mallow. And the town council didn't really know anything about Paul Kane, but there had been one of the local people who had heard about Paul Kane on the radio in Ireland, that he had been from Mallow, and his ears perked up, and he had sort of been badgering them to do something about this. You know, here's somebody that supposedly is famous, and we don't know anything about him.
Mm.
And so one day I got this phone call from Ireland, and tried to interpret what he was saying, and here he was. He was interested in receiving this sketchbook, and so a year or so later, I went to Ireland, and we had a presentation with the town council, and now they're looking at trying to do something to let people know about how important their town is.
So you've been to Japan and you've been to Ireland. Where else has this project taken you?
Well, I've done presentations in New Zealand and Australia, but we run a little bed and breakfast here in Lethbridge.
Uh-huh.
And quite often we have people from these countries, and so I was very fortunate to have somebody from New Zealand that came and they did the presentation for me when they went back.
Huh.
The first man that explored the Banff area was a man named James Hector, who later became one of the foremost citizens in New Zealand.
Now, how did he get from Banff to New Zealand? By ship, I imagine. But.
Yes, well, he was a geologist and medical doctor when he was part of the Palliser expedition. And after the expedition in Western Canada was over, he was given the opportunity to go to New Zealand and explore that area, and eventually he became the head of the Geological Survey of New Zealand. But one of the interesting things on this is when he was exploring Western Canada, he was a young man, about 23, 25, and he was sort of the, a person who had the great new ideas and this type of thing. And so we have a completely different view of him in Canada, because when I contacted the people in New Zealand, they considered James Hector an old fogey. When he was there, of course, he became sort of fossilized, and it was just interesting how we have different viewpoints of the same person depending on how old he was when he was in these different places.
I guess so. Maybe it was a different gravitational pull had some kind of adverse effect on him.
Yeah.
Never tell. All right, well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk, and maybe your travels will bring you to Vancouver sometime.
Maybe they will. You never know.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay, fine.
Okay, bye-bye. That was Bruce Haig. He's the creator of a project that collects illustrations from school children around the world and then makes them part of books about Canadian explorers. If you want to know more about this project, you can check it out on the internet. The address is www.ourheritage.net. That's one word. .net. Again, the three W's, ourheritage.net. Or you can go to the Roundup website, and there will be a link from our site to Bruce's, and that's cbc.ca. And then click on Roundup, and all will be revealed.